This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
News Radio 1070 WINA. Boy, the bugs are in the system today. I got to tell you, 521, 74 degrees. Jay James for Coy Barefoot. Local news with Rob Graham. The latest stories, of course, are available at WINA.com. And we'll go from there. All right. Also still to come. Later on this hour, several issues that we'll get to, including those involving some land use development and other things. Right now, it's Brian Wheeler and his weekly visit from Charlottesville tomorrow. He's the executive director, kind enough to join us. And let's talk about, you know, I listen to this program regularly, obviously. And Coy is always talking to you, Ha Spencer, Tom Loach. It doesn't matter who it is, about water. Are we dredging? Are we not dredging? Before we even go any further, for those of us who, we may not even be living under a rock, Brian, we're just not as engaged on this issue as some people are. Can you lay it out for them simply? What is the main problem that is causing so much discussion over this water plan?
The main problem, Jay, if you want to call it a problem, mm-hmm. The main challenge.
The main challenge. Issue.
I don't like to use negative.
Yeah, the main topic.
The challenge facing the community is we're a growing community, mm-hmm. and we need enough water at times of drought mm-hmm. such that we can still have public water.
Yeah.
We learned in 2002 that we had a very precious resource here in our water supply, and we were within about 60 days of not having water. Mm. So we got as close to 60 days, according to Tom Frederick. And, you know, you watch the news this past year, what's going on down in Atlanta and the decisions being made down there about, you know, not having enough of it. And we need to count our blessings that we've gotten by. Mm-hmm. We've had some rough years with droughts. Mm-hmm. And what we need is a water supply plan that has enough water to accommodate the growth of our population and prepares us to have enough storage for times of drought. When the rivers stop flowing, mm-hmm. basically, when yeah. they go down to nothing during a drought, we need to make sure the bathtub is big enough to support the community's needs.
Now, what are the two perspectives, or are there more? Because you've got Kevin Lynch's group, who's been on the Schilling Show and Coy Show several times, and then you have the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority, and you just referenced him, Tom Frederick. So,
well, there are many perspectives.
Okay.
And, you know, back in 2005, 2006, the discussion was which pipeline should be built. Mm-hmm. And the community was looking at going to the James River, running a pipeline down to Scottsville.
Yeah.
That was also, by the way, going to require a bigger dam to store the water. Because even if you pumped it up from Scottsville, you had to put it somewhere.
Yep.
Because even during droughts with the James River as an option, there was concern that that wouldn't be available to us during a severe drought. So the conversation used to be about which pipeline's going where. Mm-hmm. The community ended up in this plan endorsing, through the actions of City Council and the Board of Supervisors, a local pipeline that collected water from our local watershed. So one of the benefits that was seen of that design, that plan, is that we would collect the rain falling in Albemarle County and put that in our storage bathtub, so to speak.
Sure.
Now, the question then is, where is that bigger dam? The community long thought, you know, it's long-term plan. We've been doing long-term plans for water for a long time. Mm-hmm. The Ragged Mountain Reservoir was built, you know, originally back in the 1890s.
We like to long-term plan on water, transportation.
But, you know, but in this case, these long-term plans have actually been funded and built, mm-hmm. unlike some of our transportation ideas.
Yeah.
So, you know, the South Fork Reservoir was built in 1966. Those are our two big bathtubs, Ragged mm-hmm. Mountain, South Fork.
Sure.
And the pipeline would connect those two things, and it would be an expanded Ragged Mountain Reservoir. So that's, you know, down Fontaine Avenue, out Reservoir Road, and the Ragged Mountain Natural Area would be, some of that would, the trees there would be cut down so the reservoir could be built larger. So you ask, what are some of the different points of view on this?
Mm-hmm.
Some of the questions that have come up in 2008 and 2007 are, was dredging given a serious look? So dredging would be taking the muck that's building up
sure.
in South Fork Ravana Reservoir, taking it out and getting more capacity that way.
Mm-hmm.
The game here is, how can we get more capacity? Everyone agrees you can take out dirt out of the South Fork and you're going to get more capacity. One of the differences of opinion is that enough? Is dredging alone going to meet our needs?
Sure.
And the reason dredging was taken off the table is that it was seen as expensive, and it was determined that it wouldn't provide enough water supply.
Right.
So now the cost estimate was critiqued very effectively by the Hook and by this group that formed.
First it was $225 million, and then it was
sure.
$29 million.
But so. You know, one of the reasons they didn't go get a second estimate and didn't pursue it further at this time is because they knew it wouldn't give them, in their mind, enough water supply. So dredging alone wasn't going to be the option, so that it wasn't pursued further.
Okay.
Regardless of what the costs are.
Right. Okay.
So just to get that out on the table.
There you go.
Now, but that's been an area of a difference of opinion about how much dredging would ultimately cost. And then certainly there's a difference of opinion about how much of a dam you need to build at Ragged Mountain. How high, how much higher should it be? Should it be 15 feet higher? Should it be 30 feet or 45 feet? The current proposal is for a 45-foot increase in the pool level. So that dam would be 112 feet high total, be a brand new dam built below the current dam. Then you'd breach the old one and you'd have a bigger reservoir.
All right.
Where we are, if I could boil it all down, is that this 50-year plan was endorsed in 2006 by City Council and the Board of Supervisors unanimously. Dredging was taken off the table at that point because of cost, and it didn't give you enough quantity. Then in 2007, phasing and the overall cost of this plan were discussed. And this is a $140-plus million public works project we're talking about here that the ratepayers will be paying for. In 2008, the Department of Environmental Quality and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers signed off on the permits to implement this plan. And then in May and June of this year, just recently in the past month, City Council, the Board of Supervisors, with new members then who was there in 2006, they said, we re-endorse this plan. But they did so with a caveat, and that caveat, there are two caveats. One, we need to study dredging. We need to make sure we have a handle on that. How much will that cost? How much water will it get us? And then they also said we need to increase conservation efforts. So some of those elected officials see this resolution that was recently passed as if information comes back on the dredging question, they may say, well, if we can get that much water that way, we don't need as much in the Ragged Mountain Reservoir, so let's build a smaller dam there. And others have said the plan needs to continue regardless, and dredging is something that needs to be looked at to maintain that reservoir.
There you go.
That's sort of where we are. We're heading into now the a big meeting with the Ravenna Water and Sewer Authority coming up in the next week, and they are starting to plan that reservoir.
Well, Brian Wheeler is our guest from Charlottesville tomorrow. We talk about a lot of our community issues once a week here in the Coy Barefoot program, Charlottesville Right Now. Before we go to a break at the bottom of the hour for news with Rob Graham in the News Center, let's go to Betty, who's been waiting patiently on line number one at 977-1070. Betty, how are you?
Hey, I'm fine, thanks. I'm with Citizens for a Sustainable Water Plan, one of the groups Brian mentioned. And we've tried to educate the public, and we have a website called SevilleWater.info if people want more information. But one of the things we'd like people to know that is that there really is no 50-year water supply plan, that what was approved by the Board of Supervisors and the city in 2006 was a water withdrawal permit. And our group traveled to Richmond and actually talked with the regulators, who told us there is no plan, that our community has never filed a plan, but we have to file a plan, and it has to include data that is not in the permit. And so what we're saying is that we should not really complete the plan until we have a plan. And so that's part of what we've been urging our elected officials to do, is to get proper data on conservation, population, demand. And the other thing that we have brought forward, of course, is the dredging estimates, which we feel are highly out of line. But our group has never said that dredging alone is enough. And what we found was, in 2002, our community had a plan that, if you've been around that long, you may remember, we all thought that we were going to have a bladder put on the South Fork. And that plan was voted on, the money was budgeted, our water rates were doubled, and many, many people I know thought that plan was going forward, but it didn't. But what people don't realize is, besides dredging, the regulators had given a green light and said, go ahead to looking at times of drought, Chris Green Lake, Lake Albemarle, and Beaver Creek. Now, these solutions would be way less expensive than what we're talking about. So we hope people will go to our website and look at the information we've gathered. We appreciate all the input we've gotten and support, and let's look at dredging.
Okay. Hey,
as a far less costly. I mean, the other plan we're estimating, they're saying $142 million, but it looks like way over $200 million. Mm. I mean, water rates will just go through the roof with this other plan, and people have got to really, really wonder, how do we ever come up with a dredging estimate of $223 million more than dredging the Panama Canal?
Wow.
So I don't think we have the information, and we're about to really sink our citizens into a horrible situation financially and environmentally. So we urge everybody to look at our website.
Hey, Betty, thank you so much.
Thanks.
All right, take care, all right? That's Betty on line number one. Well, that's one perspective, Brian. We'll let you respond to that after this break with Rob Graham in a matter of seconds. Brian Wheeler is our guest. He's the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. Joins us for the weekly growth and development and issues locally update. And let's continue with our conversation. So I wanted to give you a chance to respond to Betty from Citizens for a Sustainable Water Supply. We touched on water briefly. We're going to move to other issues here in just a second, but feel free to respond, my friend.
Well, I want the public to be aware that Charlottesville Tomorrow does not take a position on issues like the water supply plan. Mm-hmm. Our mission is to get the best information out there possible, get the right facts on the table, make sure people understand the conversation and the decision in front of these elected officials. In this case, Betty Mooney, she and I have been in lots of meetings together, mm-hmm. and she's obviously a critic of the 50-year water supply plan. But I think it's disingenuous to tell the public that there is no plan. What she's referring to is the fact that there isn't paperwork in a department down in Richmond, mm-hmm. And she has a letter that's dated May 29th sent to her from the Department of Environmental Quality that says that the community doesn't need to file the paperwork until November 2nd, 2011. Oh. That's when a water supply plan paperwork needs to be on file. And so to say that there is no plan, I guess if there is no plan, there's nothing to worry about.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is we've had multiple unanimous votes by City Council and Board of Supervisors on something, mm-hmm. and most people call that a plan.
Right.
And it's a 50-year water supply plan. So you can say that it's, technically it may be a permit application at this point, but it's all, it's the permit reflects
it's semantics.
All the different components of what is going to be this community's water supply plan.
Right.
So I think it's a little disingenuous to suggest to the community that it doesn't exist, because that may lead people to think they're being misled,
mm-hmm.
which couldn't be further from the truth.
All right.
In my opinion.
540. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's my opinion. And,
all right.
And then to suggest that dredging, that the cost of dredging here locally in the South Fork Ravana Reservoir are comparable to dredging the Panama Canal is a complete misrepresentation.
Very different situations.
Of it's not an at a minimum, it's not an apples to apples comparison. Now, this got some media attention when Hawes Spencer and The Hook talked about a contract related to dredging, mm-hmm. in a portion of the Panama Canal,
mm-hmm.
and I'll be the first to admit I'm not a dredging expert, Jay, but you know, I have been around oceans, and I've seen dredging taking place. And, you know, my sort of guess is down in Panama, they probably have some economies of scale.
Yeah.
And they probably have some ships that, you know, take this stuff out and dump it in the ocean. And I think one of the key things that differentiates our dredging challenge is that we have to figure out where to put this stuff.
Yeah.
And we don't have an ocean nearby that we can just put a pipe in and let it go right into that ocean. It's a complicated subject. Not only do you have to worry about pulling the muck out and what you do with it, but as you pull it out, you're pulling water out. That's the water we're trying to drink.
Exactly.
And so that reduces the amount of water available in the drinking water supply. So, again, I think we just need to make sure that we're talking about this in a way that's about the facts. And I'll give them credit. I think they have done a good job getting more dredging information in front of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that has led to the Board of Supervisors and City Council saying they want to study this further. And I think, you know, this community is all about getting more information on the table, and we're going to get it with dredging.
Facts are good. So lastly on this, have both of our local governmental bodies, the Board of Supervisors and the City Council, kind of taken a little break from the whole water debate, so to speak? or are they still actively looking at proposals and all that kind of stuff?
Well, at this point, the next venue is in front of the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority. Their board will be looking at this. Mm-hmm. Their board has representatives from both the city and the county, and they'll be talking about the next steps. They've gotten the permit approvals that they need, and now they'll be talking about the design of the dam and how big it should be and when they should start constructing it.
All right, 543 with Brian Wheeler from Charlottesville tomorrow. You're always welcome to join us at 977-1070. Let's move to a city issue now, as opposed to a city-county issue for a little bit. And the downtown mall is something that the residents of the county and the city, it's a pedestrian mall, one of the ones that is pointed to as one of the best on the East Coast. But the bricks are wearing down. It's just a part of what happens, erosion, weather. So there's a plan, Brian, to resurface the mall. Has the city decided on this? And how much, I'm sure if you're a city resident, you're saying, how much is it going to cost me?
Okay, I'll answer that first. The current estimate is $7.5 million to renovate the downtown mall. Now, that includes more than just resurfacing, but that's the big cost, resurfacing the mall with new bricks.
Would they do anything with the infrastructure of the buildings at the $7.5 million, or is it all about the surfacing?
It's about the surfacing and the some of the infrastructure related to lighting and the existing fountains. Mm-hmm. So they certainly want to fix that up. But no, they're not talking about adding anything substantial under the streets, so to speak. The downtown mall everyone will agree, I think, is a very special place. I've had the privilege of working downtown since 1990 when I graduated at UVA. So I've spent a lot of time walking on that mall. And you certainly see, people tripping on places where the bricks are heaving up. You certainly see heels getting stuck in the cracks between, not my heels, but you see
you have something that's up?
See no. other heels getting stuck in between the bricks. And so it's becoming a danger to people walking on the mall. And that's one of the reasons they want to resurface it. But they're also trying to respect the original design and the intentions of Mr. Halperin, who designed this back in the 1970s when it was installed. They've also got trees that they're concerned may be dying and that they need to have a replacement plan for those trees. So one of the interesting topics is what size will those bricks be? Mm-hmm. And one of the things they're talking about doing is not using bricks with mortar in between them, but setting them on a sand base and then, have a little bit of sand in between them. If the public who has walked around the Court Square area mm-hmm. or around, I believe it's 3rd Street, the new little mall extension they did along the Paramount Theater, you can see there what those bricks look like when they're set in sand. Mm-hmm. Now, those bricks are a little smaller and more the size you would see going vertically on a wall.
Sure.
The original downtown mall design has a very large brick. The problem is, I think they can only get those in Nebraska, apparently.
Okay.
And there's some concern about going to that expense to get them. So they are wrestling with that brick design, which one they pick. But also, very important to the business community on the downtown mall is, how long is this going to take? The 3rd Street renovation took, two or three times longer than they thought it was going to. Now, in the city's defense, they say when they pulled the old road up, they found lots of pipes they weren't aware of underneath the streets. They say under the downtown mall, that's not as big an issue because that's pretty well documented. Mm-hmm. But the challenge they're putting in front of the community is they're moving some money up in their capital plan to try to do this faster. And they're trying to do it in 4 months next year. And start in January and finish in April, I believe. And the goal would be to get it all, resurface the entire mall in 4 months.
In 4 months, yes. Starting in January. Now, what is impeding that happening right now? It has to be approved? Is this a proposal, or could they go forward with this right now?
They need to get the Board of Architectural Review to sign off on the brick style, and they need the final plan that they're going to try to implement. Mm-hmm. Some other things that have they've backed out of the plan. City Council very much said, we're not sure about all these bells and whistles. So some of the fountains and play areas, they've said, no, let's go back to a basic design, because they're trying to keep it within or under, preferably under the budget of $7.5 million. There is a contingency plan, but right now, They're trying to make it more bare bones and get it done quickly so that the businesses aren't disrupted. Previously, they were looking at spreading this out over 3+ years and sort of moving the renovation around the mall. Mm-hmm. And it would seriously impact some businesses, but only some at a time.
And that's the question I have. If Brian Wheeler, I guess, from Charlottesville tomorrow, we're talking about the renovation and resurfacing of the downtown mall, been around for over 30 years. Great pedestrian mall. But are numbers diminishing? Do we know, is there any data out there that says, are people still utilizing the downtown mall in the same way that they used to, maybe in the mid to late 90s or even the early part of this century? Because one of the things I see when I look at different businesses, you wonder, are they really prospering in their location downtown the way they used to? Because it just doesn't seem like the foot traffic is there anymore. And if it isn't, is it worth the $7.5 million? Now, granted, you don't have to say whether it's worth the $7.5 million. That's something for the councilors to decide. But have we seen anything that would show that people are not enjoying the now with the safety concerns of after dark and all that kind of stuff? Has the mall been hurt, I guess, by some of these issues?
Well, you know, I think it depends who you ask. I think the folks working on this project did a survey of stakeholders, businesses, people in the community, about what they wanted to see in a mall renovation. Certainly, I would point out that the business community made sure that the issue of traffic, cars crossing the mall and pedestrian use of the mall, those two things were heavily debated mm-hmm. when the second mall crossing was discussed.
Yeah.
So I've heard business leaders say that when the end of the mall near the First Amendment monument was under renovation in front of City Hall, that was very disruptive to lose that second vehicular crossing of the mall and then have that area torn up so much. And I think around the Paramount, the same thing. You saw businesses disrupted during the Paramount's construction and then disrupted when they put in the bricks this past year.
Mm-hmm.
So there have been situations where we've had businesses leave the mall, and I think it's for a variety of reasons, though. We certainly have some empty storefronts now, but as I view it, just as somebody who's spent a lot of time there, I don't see any decrease in the population out there at lunch.
Yeah, that's who's thriving, the food service.
And I'm certainly pumping in my lunch dollars into the local economy. So my anecdotal answer is it seems as vibrant as ever to me.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly see storefronts that are empty, but I think that's part of this business cycle.
All right, we'll take a break and be back to finish it up with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville tomorrow. Let's go to line number one. We've been talking about the downtown mall and the resurfacing, and Howard's been waiting patiently on line one. Howard, you're a great member of the Commonwealth. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to make a comment and then just ask you to comment on it.
Sure.
This may seem like a stretch, but listening about this mall renovation project on the heels of thinking about the dredging controversy,
mm-hmm.
it seemed to me that there's a mindset in government and that these two things are connected. If you look at the problem with the reservoir and the water supply, there is a strong aspect of deferred maintenance involved with the problems that we're facing now. The water line from Sugar Hollow is suffering from deferred maintenance. The Rivanna Reservoir is obviously suffering from deferred maintenance. And the government's response, or the agency's response, was, well, let's just do away with that and we'll start over.
Mm.
We'll build a new reservoir, we'll build a new dam, we'll build a new pipeline. And with a promise of great water for the next 50 years, which really is a promise of more deferred maintenance for the next 50 years. And then you look at the downtown mall, and they have hundreds of thousands of bricks down there. And rather than restore what's there, their response is, well, let's just throw them all away and start over again. So there's a mindset that some of us in the private sector would look at and go, you couldn't run your business that way, and you couldn't run your household that way. So what is it about people who take checks from the government that makes them be such terrible stewards of our money when they don't spend our money? That's what I think the essential problem is here, and I just wanted your thoughts on it.
Wow. Hey, thanks for the call, Howard. You have a good day. Brian, we'll go ahead and respond.
Yeah, great questions, Howard. I think you're absolutely right that maintenance has been put off on many of these infrastructure things, and we've certainly talked a lot about it on this program, especially on water infrastructure, sewer infrastructure. Those bills are all now coming due.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not just, had we done those things, would that have been enough? Because we also are a growing community. So as the community grows, we need more capacity. We need more ability to treat water. Mm-hmm. So our sewer treatment facility has to expand. So it's a combination of things. Would we have been better off had we made some of these investments in maintaining things sooner? I don't think anyone's going to argue that we wouldn't
have. Well, Brian,
have.
Is there forward thinking on some of these issues? Like, are they trying to prepare in government? You watch the counselors and the Board of Supervisors very closely. Are they trying to plan ahead, you know, whether it be fiscally or even just as a matter of operation for some of these problems we're going to face in the next few years?
Well, this is a national issue. I mean, yeah. If you think about bridges and transportation.
They never plan.
And maintenance there. I don't know if I would describe that as a mindset or a challenge of funding or some combination of things. I guess what I would reflect on positively about our community is that at least over the past 3 years, there has been a heavy-duty discussion about the investments we need to make in maintaining and improving our infrastructure. So the recent, I guess the answer, Jay, to the recent situation is we're doing a lot of long-term thinking right now and trying to get the resources in place to upgrade what we need. I wasn't paying attention back when these decisions were not made in the past, so I'm not sure. And I haven't done that research to try to figure it out.
Yeah.
And then you probably find people with a variety of opinions about that. The downtown mall bricks, I want to direct Howard to our website. The top story right now, SeavilleTomorrow.org, has to do with the mall project, or it might be the second story. But if you look at that project, you'll see, or at that story, you'll see that one of the city councilors, Satyendra Huja, talked at length about trying to recycle the bricks. Ultimately, in the conversation, he was convinced it couldn't be done. So there's some feedback from staff about why salvaging the existing bricks is not an option. It's a great question. I think they are going to try to use some of them in a design aspect for maybe some of the trim features. But they also will need to buy more of them no matter what. Because let's say you could recycle 100% of these bricks. One of my staff members who wrote the story, Sean Tubbs, he pointed out that if you take all the bricks out, eliminate the mortar that's in between them, they take up less space.
Yeah.
So you would have to buy more bricks anyway.
Yeah.
And then you know how it is with brick projects. Do they quite match the color? You know, I've never seen that work well.
No.
But anyway, it's a great question, Howard. Appreciate your call.
Brian Wheeler, it is always a pleasure, my friend. We'll archive a portion of this interview at WINA.com. CharlottesvilleTomorrow.org is the website. Brian Coy will be looking for you next Tuesday, my friend. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Jay.
All right.